From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. It's Midnight Movie Sick Boys. If you can't tell, my throat's all messed up because I'm ill. This is Hunter Dusing in Dallas, Texas, and joining me in the wild outback of Australia is Stuart Bulk. Say hello, Stu.
Hello, everyone, and I'm not sick. I'm just hopped up on caffeine.
He's not sick. He's sick, bro.
We can't talk like that.
Well, you know. On the inside.
That's your backwards cap-wearing jocks over there who talk like that.
Well, we wear JNCOs, we drink Surge, and we listen to POD, okay? And we play Tony Hawk Pro Skater, right?
So
that's
you're
what we do.
That's how
we
roll. Tiny Hawks.
We listen to Korn.
Yeah.
And Drowning Pool.
Drowning Pool, yeah. Dallas band, all right.
Let the bodies hit the floor, come on.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Yeah, that and what's that song by Saliva? Click, click, boom. Those are all in like the 90s movie trailers, you know?
Any old school Godsmack.
Yeah, yeah. I have like the little like mini dreads on my head and I bleach them, you know? Like Rob Flynn when Machine Head went new metal for a minute, which apparently they've done again on their new album. Everybody's wondering what the hell's going on, but I wouldn't buy that because it's on Nuclear Blast. F those people. Anyway,
what's wrong with Nuclear Blast? I got to hear this one quickly.
They're a bunch of Antifa people.
Get fucked. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, you know, unless it's some legacy thing, like Michael Schenker, not going to buy it. Sorry. But nope. I'm an Eddie Trunk type person. I like Michael Schenker.
And I want to say hi, everybody. I'm not Hunter Dusing.
Yeah. Let me introduce Rocky Mountain High. Colorado, John Gray. Say hello, John.
Howdy, everybody.
Yeah, that's John. So, yeah, before we get into our goofiness. Yeah, this is a very music-themed show. We're going to have a couple of music-themed shows. I know it's not Rock Month, but these are rockumentaries, back in the rockumentary mode.
Yeah.
You know, and this one is our nihilistic late 70s, early 80s punk in L.A.,
and really our most trend-setting one, because this is, if you think about it, this is the most imitated music documentary probably of all time. Until VH1 did Behind the Music, and that established a new formula.
Yeah. You know, John, real quick, you did you reviewed Super Duper Alice Cooper on Letterboxd, and you said it kind of follows the VH1 Behind the Music, like Addiction and Redemption.
Yeah, it's her hero's journey is basically big rock star, gets into drugs, goes into rehab, comes out. He's making his best music in years.
Yeah,
or whatever the hell.
And it's like, I think the only new piece of information in that was that Alice was like a massive cokehead. Apparently,
yeah. I did not know about the cocaine at all.
Yeah, that was the only revelation in the documentary, was that Alice had a coke problem. Like everybody knew about his alcohol problem.
Yeah, the picture of Alice Cooper weighing about 4 pounds didn't give it away, I guess.
There's a 1979 show. He's the skinniest human being I've ever seen actually move.
Oh, I remember the video for Clones. I'm like, what the fuck happened to Alice? He looks like he looks like one of his golf tees. He just, his golf flags, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah, he was scrawny. He's like a skeleton with skin.
Yeah. But
that was like Special Forces era Alice Cooper when he was kind of doing goth stuff that he says he doesn't remember doing.
it was kind of counter-signaling New Wave.
Yeah.
A friend of ours is actually working on a documentary about it, about that era of Alice Cooper. And it was kind of the anti-New Wave thing. Like
There is no such thing as New Wave. Let me tell you, there's no such thing.
Well, if you look at those videos, he's very militant. Like, he's dressed up like a military cop or whatever. Yeah. It was kind of like he was counter-signaling the kind of fey, fruity new wave imagery, you know, like Duran Duran.
Yeah, they had like berets and skulls on the album,
right.
And like swords and stuff. Like it was very militant.
And a skeleton behind the microphone.
I always thought Alice has always been pretty right wing, you know.
Yeah, he is.
I've always guessed that because I heard an interview he did with Eddie Trunk, and he said he won't really divulge his political sort of alliance.
See, it's not like rock and roll to be political. Like he said, like, oh, I hate when rockers are political.
He's an admitted Republican. Like, I think he is.
He's kind of basically said, you know, he's a born again Christian. You know, automatically that kind of is a right wing signal right there.
Yeah.
But you know, Alice has always been, and he's always made fun of liberal, you know, signaling rock stars. So, you know,
he said even in the 60s, like when all the hippies were like, we got to stop bombing Cambodia or bombing Vietnam. And then he said, no, we were in our hotel rooms watching TV, watching the news going, yeah, bomb those commies. Which was actually the opinion of the majority of the country, contrary to what movies portray.
Like, oh, they make it seem like
Skull Island or whatever.
What was it? When we look at, you know, when you look at the hippie movement, media today makes it seem like that was the majority of the country. No, that was like California, New York degenerates, and college kids. You know, it was not the majority of the country. Like, when I was talking about the 1920s. And I said, look, you know, the flappers and all the stuff that you see, I show clips of Mickey Spillane talking about the flappers and hoo hoo hoo, you know. But I said that was urban people. The majority of America was still evangelical, you know, church going, didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't do any of that stuff. I said, you know, that was like New York. Like a lot of the 20 stuff you see is New York culture. It's not American culture.
Yeah. It was farmland. It was farmers and factory workers and such.
Yeah, yeah. It was Ford, like, you know, the Ford, you know, the assembly line and the factory, you know. So I was just like, you know, this isn't it's not indicative of mainstream U.S. culture. It's just the media put out there, because mass media became a thing in the 20s. That was kind of when the old weird America started to die, because everybody started consuming the same culture.
Just
it's kind of like punk, you know, it's a niche thing.
Punk wasn't big.
Just real quick, I want to just recommend a book for somebody, of people out there. Oh, first of all, recommend Paul Talbot's two books, which I bought a couple of days ago, finally on for the Kindle. The Bronson's Loose and Bronson's Loose Again. So pick them up, either via the hard copy or via digitally off Kindle. Another one I've started reading, which I can highly recommend, I'm not finished yet, is a book called Richard Nixon, The Life, by John A. Farrell. It's absolutely fascinating read about Nixon. So if Richard Nixon interests you at all, definitely pick that book up. It's excellent.
I've actually want to do like a video like Nixon Reconsidered, you know, like kind of push against the main Nixon narrative. But so Decline of Western Civilization, directed by Penelope Spheeris, who most, you know, normies will know from Wayne's World.
Right.
She directed a trilogy of these documentaries. The first one, the one we're talking about today, is about 1979 to 1981. Like, well, 1980, really, New York punk. I mean, not New York, I'm sorry, L.A. punk. And the second one is about L.A. hair metal. And the third one's about L.A. gutter punks, which is basically the prequel to Antifa, I guess. But this documentary is extremely influential. It's legendary, I would say. I mean, I heard about it for years and years and years, and it was unavailable before I finally saw it when Shout Factory put out all of them on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. And that's when I managed to watch all of them. And the Blu-ray set is great. It's got a lot of commentaries. This one has a commentary with Penelope Spheeris and her daughter, who did a lot of the work on the set in the restoration. And yeah, it has another commentary with Dave Grohl.
The daughter pretty much spearheaded this whole campaign to get this box.
Yeah, she did. Penelope Spheeris said she didn't really want to do it. You know, but she kind of came around. But Dave Grohl did one. Obviously, a member of the Foo Fighters, Pat Smear, is featured prominently as the guitarist of the Germs. So
and an interviewee in the Interview the Punks segment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Guess which one he is. Not hard.
Yeah, he's pretty. I mean, when I saw the movie, I went, "Oh my gosh, that's the guy from the Foo Fighters!" Like, I didn't know anything about the Germs.
Kids.
I just knew that their lead singer committed suicide. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
But it just kind of goes through the scene. It highlights a bunch of bands. The bands it highlights are Alice Bag Band, Black Flag, Circle Jerks, Catholic Discipline, Fear, The Germs, and X. And there's interviews with most of them, not all of them, but you get a lot of performances with them.
Which band, I want to ask you guys, was your favorite out of a lot?
Fear, without a question.
Yeah, mine was Fear as well.
Fear tied with the Circle Jerks for me.
Yeah, like it would for me. The top three would be Fear, Circle Jerks, and Black Flag.
Yeah,
those would be the three for me.
Is that, I thought not X, the Alice Bag
X are
Band,
okay, but I like their album more than I like the performances.
They're a bizarre live act. Like I've seen X live many times, like enough times where I've lost count of how many times I've seen them. But I would always talk to young people at those shows. They would start talking to me, and they had never heard of X. They were there for the opening act. And I said, well, you know, they're one of those bands, you're either going to love them or you're going to walk right out. And within three songs, they walked right out.
Yeah, I believe that.
Well, I remember...
They're a bit of a... They've got like a weird rockabilly meets punk style, but like a real punk pared down of rockabilly. And it's kind of... There's some George Jones and Tammy Wynette punk, done punk type of thing going on there. And it's just not for everybody.
No.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, because like Henry Rollins has always said X is his favorite live band and stuff. So they're kind of polarizing, but I wasn't crazy about
it. It's the beatnik lyrics. That's what it is. Yeah, they have very beatnik, brilliant beatnik lyrics. But
well, they covered The Doors and got Ray Manzarek to play Soul Kitchen.
Oh, the critics loved them. Critics were in love with X. That was the only LA punk band that critics liked.
Yeah.
Although I think the best band of that era or that scene is not featured here, and they were probably broken up by then, was the Weirdos.
Never heard of them.
Oh, man, if you go listen to their stuff on YouTube, go listen to Solitary Confinement. That's like the best punk rock song out of the whole LA scene of any.
Hey, where was the Cramps from?
The Cramps were from Ohio originally, and they started up in New York.
Oh, okay, so not that side of the okay.
Right, they probably didn't move to Hollywood or Los Angeles.
They were like a middle America thing. Like they did their first stuff in Memphis with Alex Chilton.
Yeah.
From Big Star.
Okay. You said before there's a couple of very influential documentary. This one is, what's some others out there that are sort of knockoffs of it? There's only one I know of called Another State of Mind, which John helped me out. Was that done in Canada?
Another State of Mind, I think it was done. Was that the one with Social Distortion?
Yeah.
And I think it interviewed those square pegs in Fugazi. Yeah. Well, it wasn't Fugazi, that was Minor Threat.
It was Minor Threat, and, yeah.
Yeah. It was like, that was sort of a L.A. meets D.C. punk thing. I saw it years ago, and I thought the funniest thing about it is what a gothy wuss Mike Ness actually was. Like, he puts off this image that he's some blue-collar, you know, greaser type of guy, and he's like... Yeah. Yeah, he's putting mascara under his eyes and stuff. He's like 15 or whatever. And I don't know. It's just weird.
Ian McKay in the ice cream shop.
Yeah.
Serving out Haagen Dazs.
Henry Rollins actually managed.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That was Hank's ice cream shop. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you guys get your hands on that one. That's a good sort of double feature you can run with this one.
Yeah, that was inspired by this. There was something called, like, I don't think DOA, the punk rock movie, probably came out at the same time, but that was a pretty much an amateurish Lech Kowalski trying to make money off the New York scene. He had footage of Sid Vicious, which back then was extremely rare.
Yeah.
You know, punk was a very whispered, or, you know, the records never sold in the States. A lot of these bands did better in Europe. They did better in Australia. They, you know, probably did better everywhere except America.
It's like when I met Lips from Anvil. I said, you know, my buddy from Australia is a big fan of you guys. And he goes, it's always a guy from Australia. It's never like your friend down the street. It's always some guy from across the world.
Oh, he was probably stoned as fuck as well. No, him.
He seemed pretty lucid. He was nice. Lips was a hoot. He was fun.
Yeah. I was going to say, John just said back about a minute or so ago that the footage of Sid Vicious would be considered rare. I'd say footage of Darby Crash would be even rarer.
Nowadays it is. Because Darby Crash was unknown outside of L.A. back then.
Hmm. And there's a movie about him called What We Do Is Secret.
Oh, is it?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, there's a biopic about him.
Oh, wow.
What We Do Is Secret, yeah. It was inspired by this movie.
Oh, nice. I've got to see that.
Yeah, I didn't really know about it until I was reading some stuff about the movie, and I found out about that. I went, oh, I didn't know. I had heard the title, but when I hear a title like that, I think, okay, this is some pretentious, you know, art movie or something about, like, sex or something.
I thought
I couldn't finish it. I tried to watch it on Netflix years ago, and it's just I can't get into musical biopics with actors.
I'll tell you what, there is. I'll recommend one to you, which is absolutely brilliant. It's worth your time. Called Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. It's a biopic on Ian Dury.
Yeah, okay. The one with Andy Serkis.
Yes.
Yeah,
and you think, oh God, Gollum is Ian Dury? No, he's great. It's. I highly recommend it.
I actually liked Control quite a bit. The one about Ian Curtis from Joy Division.
Yeah, I've not seen that.
I've seen neither. So there.
That one is the what kind of gives that one some authenticity was it was directed by Anton Corbin, who actually knew all those guys, and he was Joy Division's photographer, so he was there for all of that stuff. So, you know, even though like people have said, yeah, you know, it's a movie, you know, it's not like 100% real. It captures a lot of it because Corbin was the director was actually there. He's not just imagining all of it. Like he's kind of giving his interpretation of his memories of it.
I'm surprised no one has ever approached Bob Gruen about his time with the New York Dolls and getting the film done about them. I mean, yeah, I know there's a couple of docos he's got out that he shot video footage of, which is I'd say you reckon about getting rare footage of Sid Vicious, footage of the New York Dolls. Thank God Bob Gruen got that because you wouldn't have nothing if we didn't have those.
Yeah, you just have their appearance on the Midnight Special.
That'd be it.
That'd be about it. Yeah. Or whatever network show they appeared on, which I remember when I bought a bootleg tape of that. That was like the most exciting rock and roll footage I'd found in 5 or 6 years. Just like, jeez.
Yeah, I remember buying one of those VHS tapes, and I've got Gruen's all dolled up.
Yeah.
Disc, yeah. But anyway, getting back to this one. Sorry, went off on a tangent.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah.
That's us.
We like that.
The biopic you were talking about with Darby Crouch, I actually thought was called Big Ass Spider.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, that too. Yeah, the scene with him. By the way, I love how, you know, we'll get to decline two scenes in this basically were recreated. You know, Darby making breakfast, and then you have Ozzy making breakfast Part two. And, you know, Lemmy standing over the freeway and stuff. Like, they kind of recreated some of the aesthetic a little bit. But yeah, Darby making breakfast, you know, it's kind of a lucid moment for him.
Oh, no. But, the tarantula walking all over his fucking arm is like what spun me out. Like, no way. I mean, I don't have a fear of spiders, but come on, that tarantula was enormous.
Was it Penelope Spheris said in the commentary that the Germs music is invasive to the soul? she said hearing that music was so disturbing to her that, like, on the car ride home, she had the deepest sleep she's ever felt because it was she was just so, like, emotionally upset by it.
In all honesty,
the funny thing about tarantulas is they're harmless. They're if they bite you, it's like a kitten biting you.
Yeah, they're not like the small spiders. The ones you gotta worry about, like brown recluse.
Another redback over here. Oh God.
Yeah, that fucker that kills you down in Australia.
Oh yeah, yeah.
30 seconds.
Yeah, if it bites you, you better have an antidote on you straight away. Otherwise, you're fucked.
Do tourists have to buy like the antidote when they're there before they get off the plane or whatever?
I don't know if you got to have some sort of you got to have an injection beforehand. I don't know, but I mean they're not common. They're not like you just you know you pick up a.
It's not a household spider.
Right. Well, like they can
Tennessee,
be found
like the brown recluse. Like I know people have been bitten by those. Those are like you know, but at the same time, you know, you can get treatment for them pretty quick. You know, it's not. Yeah. You know, you can kind of notice something's wrong, and you know it's hard to ignore a brown recluse bite.
But one thing I noticed in this, apart from, I would say fear and probably apart from fear, was the rest of the bands sucked. Like just playing ability, just the music alone, just The music in this was pretty fucking bad, really. I didn't care much for it.
Well, they're all three-chord. They're basically just three-chord garage bands playing real fast.
Yeah.
That's all they are. I mean, Fear was... Lee Ving was a bit smarter. He was actually the oldest guy in that scene. Like, he'd better... allegedly, he's been in Vietnam. Maybe he was.
Lee Ving, everybody always talks about how he was... As far as that scene goes, he was way old. He was like kind of like Doug Pennick in King's X. Like, Doug Pennick was like 40 or something when King's X really blew up.
Yeah.
And I've seen Fear live, and they were good live. Anti-Scene, I thought, was more interesting, the band that opened for them. But I've also seen X and Circle Jerks live, and Circle Jerks were probably the best live.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be stunned how great they sound. Well, I mean, they had a way bigger catalog since this movie came out, so there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
want to get caught in that that mosh pit or whatever they had for the Circle Jerks. That was kind of frightening.
That's when it got bad. Like, and actually, Keith of the Circle Jerks, when he opens a show, he says, "If you guys start fighting in the pit, we quit playing, and that's it."
Oh, really? Yeah.
If you hit anybody with a closed fist and start a fight, we stop. And we'll walk off the stage because they had a lot of violence problems, I think, in L.A. back when they were playing. So
yeah, Roland's mentioned it in his book and his audio book as well about Gunner with Circle Jerks show and one of the other bands as well. I can't remember, but one thing I noticed on here, which I'm going to look stupid when I say it, but when they had Black Flag on and they had Chuck Dukowski, I'm going, did they have a bass player before Chuck Dukowski? Because, boy, this guy looks like he's twin. Because he had another name in this, like his real name or something.
Yeah, that was Chuck. I mean, that was Chuck.
I actually had to look it up after I'd watched the film and go, what was this guy? Was that Chuck Dukowski or is it, am I seeing things or what? But, yeah, it was him. But with his, I guess, what was it, Hunter, his real name?
I don't know.
Documentary.
They had bass players before Chuck. I think even Spot was their bass player at one point. And Raymond Pettibone, I think when they started out, was the bass player. But when this movie was made, Chuck was the bass player.
Right. Okay.
If we ever get Joe Carducci on the show, he can straighten all of this out for us.
Oh, okay.
It's because he worked at SST, so.
Yeah, Joe Carducci knows all the inside dope on all this.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why he's always posting St. Vitus videos.
That was his favorite band, that whole label.
They were Vitus. An SST. They were the finest band on SST, in my opinion. But yeah, Chuck was not their original bass player, but he was by far the most prominent. You know, he played on the records with Keith and, you know, Ron Reyes and.
Yeah, this was not their biggest era. It was actually the Dez Cadena vocal era was the biggest for Black Flag.
Predate that era?
Yes,
yeah,
it does.
Yeah, I think it was right before. Because Keith of the Circle Jerks was their original singer.
Yeah,
and that stuff is terrific if you can find the...
That is the best Black Flag stuff. The best Black Flag album is the first 4 years compilation.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's the one that Rollins goes on about as the best one with the three singers over that period.
Yeah, Henry says that. I think he's being self-deprecating, but it's true. You know, because the Rollins stuff, I mean, I think Damaged is a fine album, and My War has some good stuff because Chuck wrote a lot of it.
Right.
But after that, it gets like slam beat poetry, like jazz metal nonsense.
Yeah, you know? Ridiculous.
Yeah. And Dez Cadena taught Rollins how to sing, basically. He taught him how to preserve his voice.
Didn't do much of a job.
And everything.
I saw Dez play with the Misfits, and Robo was playing drums with them, too.
Oh, so you saw that lineup of the
Misfits. Yeah, I saw the Jerry Only, Dez, and Robo lineup.
Oh, God. I blow people away that I saw Johnny Cash.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
I said, you know what? The place was half filled because it was in Boston. He wasn't this legendary comeback guy at the time.
No, it wasn't. Rick Rubin wasn't producing him.
Well, no, the Rick Rubin album was out, but it hadn't caught on with the hipsters.
Okay.
It had been out for a year, but... It took like the second or third album for that to catch on.
When it really blew up was the fourth one with the Hurt cover.
Yeah, definitely.
The you know, the Apocalypse song, the one that was in like Dawn of the Dead and stuff.
Right. I reckon the best of those is pretty much, what was it, number 5? I think it was. One of my favorites. Number one, number five.
Is that another one?
Yeah, Ain't No Grave is the opener.
That one had some good dark stuff on it.
I like the first one because his voice is in the best shape, I think.
And it has Danzig songs on it.
Right.
Yeah, 13. Yeah.
13. Black Flag, you know, the Keith stuff is the best, but Ron Reyes came after him, the guy who's in this documentary. Then it was Dez. Then Henry came in.
Mm.
And Dez was still in the band, but he just moved to guitar for a while.
Yeah.
And one thing I kind of noticed was a lot of the people in this movie, I was like, a lot of these are rich kids.
Yes.
Greg Ginn, who I actually think is a talented guitar player, even though, you know, the later Black Flag stuff I don't really care for. You know, he kind of dresses like a, you know, polo and slacks guy, you know, with pretty conservative hair. And I remember Henry talking about he lived in Greg's parents' like garden shed or something.
Right.
So, you know, I think Greg was kind of, you know, SST was kind of, I don't know if it was. I mean, Joe Carducci can fill us in, but I think Greg's, you know, one reason that band was able to subsist probably was because of Greg's parents, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. That's always the case. Van Halen, it was the same thing. David Lee Roth's dad financed a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. They had, you know, that kind of helped the band. That helped them not need day jobs, you know.
Yeah, but Rolling Stones, you know, Mick and Keith were from rich families. It's not that unusual.
Yeah, so, but I just noticed Greg was a little more clean cut. You know, that guy has a reputation for being a legendary asshole.
Right.
I don't know. He always seems pretty reasonable in interviews, but I don't know.
I think what it is he's probably very right of center. Like
he definitely is. He's right wing. You know, he looks like the white nationalists you saw in Charlottesville. You know?
Well, he with his tiki torch. Well, like when Breitbart died, he was like the only punk rock celebrity guy who said it's really disappointing to see people react that way to someone's death just because you disagree on about 7% of spending.
Yeah. Well, he had an active Facebook page for a while.
Yeah.
And it was pretty, you know, him just right wing posting on there. Like, you know, it was, I think that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. So that spread a lot of stuff about him being a jerk, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah. And you can always tell when they publicly turn against him is when their politics become more obvious.
Yep. And it, like, you know, his brother Raymond Pettibone, I think, is kind of like talk crap about him, and I think he's pretty liberal. But yeah, I don't know. I've never bought the Greg Ginn's a jerk meme, you know. No. And Penelope Spheeris only had nice things to say about him on the commentary. She said she could listen to him talk all day, and that he's very intelligent and always seems to think out what he's going to say. She was very, you know, and she, I don't think she's a conservative at all. I think she's, you know, kind of a cat lady.
Right.
But, she was very, you know, complimentary of him.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you notice about,
because I was kind of interested in that. I was like, what's Spheris going to say about him? Is she going to run with the Ginn's a jerk meme? But no, she was like, he's great. I love him.
The thing I noticed about Penelope Spheris is when you look at her at each time of her making the documentaries, in 1979, she looks like a punk chick. In 1989, she looks like a metal chick.
Mm-hmm.
So she—I don't know if she's blending in with the scene that she's covering, or just that's the way she.
Well, she said her approach was to. She said she didn't want to be outside of it. She wanted to be in it, and so I think her thing is she dives right in and becomes part of it. And you know that was what she kind of said was, I, you know, want to do this documentary as though I'm actively participating in it. But she also talked about how, you know, she's seen a lot of music movements and has run around with them. So I think she kind of is a bit of a, you know, a shapeshifter in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
The Black Flag stuff I enjoyed in the movie. I liked the Ron Reyes performances. You know, it was pretty fun. Their little squat and the you know, abandoned Baptist church. You know, they talk about the hippies. You know, they get really mad, but they just smoke weed and want to talk about it. You know, Chuck Jankowski was hilarious sitting there drinking his Colt 45.
Yeah, boy. That's one of the beers I think you told me to stay away from when I was there with you in 2011.
Oh, yeah. Colt 45 is garbage. Do not touch that stuff.
Yeah,
that is hobo beer right there. Yeah. I don't care what Billy D. Williams says. That stuff is trash.
It's like Fred Sanford talking about Ripple. That's Colt 45.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, anything else about Black Flag?
This guy didn't last much longer, apparently, after the documentary was released. I think he was
gone. He was kind of... He was ejected. In fact, he's credited as Chavo Pederast. I think they were pretty pissed at him with the way he left. But he actually came back when Greg brought Black Flag back, when he reactivated the band. You know, he's reactivated it a few times with... Who's that skater he had singing? I got to look it up. But Greg's reactivated Black Flag a few times. I think they're inactive now. But he's reactivated that band a few times. And the singer he had was Mike Vallely.
Okay.
He would have Mike Vallely, the pro skater, doing vocals. But... For a while, he had Ron Reyes come back, and they did a tour. But again, he and Greg didn't get along, I guess, or something, but he kind of left the band. It kind of continued the Greg Ginn's a jerk meme.
Right.
But yeah, he did an album called What The with them. That was their first album since, you know, Loose Nut or whatever that last one was. Is it... In My Head, never mind. In My Head. What The in 2013 was with Ron Reyes. So they did another album. So he came back and did a whole record with Greg. None of the other classic members, though.
Right.
It says, oh, well, except Dale Nixon, Greg's bassist pseudonym.
Well, I saw a Rollins and Mother Love Bone or whatever. What was that band he was with? Mother Superior. That was their name.
Mother Superior, yeah.
Right. That he replaced the Rollins
band with. That was the best Rollins band stuff.
It was. Those guys could play. They were amazing.
I mean, what was it? Get Some and Go Again. That album kicks butt. I love it.
When I saw them live, what it was is they were doing a Black Flag tribute, and Keith Morris for the Circle Jerks and the original Black Flag singer first came out and opened with Mother Superior. He did, like, the set of all the Black Flag songs he wrote. And then Rollins came out and did all of his Black Flag songs and did some of his own, but mostly Black Flag. And it was a benefit for the West Memphis 3. And this is back in 2002 or whatever. And Keith was terrific.
Rollins wrote a book about it called Broken Summers. That was his West Memphis 3 years.
Oh, okay.
If you can handle Rollins's, you know, weird emotional outbursts.
I can't stand his writing, so. What impressed me when I was 19 is not going to impress me. Yet.
No. I read it because, you know, that album, that tribute album is pretty good, and I kind of wanted to see how it came together. But there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of annoying crap in it.
And of course, what we really know about him that doesn't come out, it makes it even more silly.
Well, and you know, but because he did that tour, it caused Greg to reactivate Black Flag, and that's when you got some of the Mike Vallely shows.
I see.
Yeah, because Greg was kind of like, oh, you know, I think even Kira Rossler came out and played with them, the bass player from the later Black Flag years.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But, you know. The Henry years of that band are not as good. You know, I think Damaged is good. I like My War, but after that, it's, you know, you get stuff like Family Man.
Yeah. Pass.
Yeah, Pass. Like Spoken Word.
Yeah, Causes Without Rebels, basically.
So
let's talk about the best band in the actual documentary. It's not Fear, it's the Alice Bag Band.
that band was a total fart for me.
Terrible. Yeah, it's like, why am I watching this crap? But I mean, yeah.
I think the funny thing is, if you could find it on YouTube, find clips of New Wave Theater. I think it's actually a better sampling of the bands that were big in that scene at that time. Well, a couple of years after that time, I think it was 81, 82 that ran. And it's a lot better. Like, you don't get the likes of the Alice Bag Band too often.
Yeah.
And yeah, they went with Penelope went with whoever allowed her to film them. So, you know, I don't know why the Weirdos aren't there, or there's some other really good bands from that scene, and they're not represented here. But it just depends on who allowed, you know, her to come in with her cameras and film them, and, you know, sign away the permission to use their music.
And I think Catholic Discipline was in there because of the Slash Magazine Association, because that was a big part of the documentary was Slash, which, you know, put out some of the Misfits stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And later put out Faith No More.
Catholic Discipline was another one that I thought was boring, you know, just really pretentious and just way too overthought. It was like music critic music. It was music by music critics.
Well,
you know?
That is what it is.
Yeah.
You know? I'm surprised the Dead Kennedys weren't there. Were they around that time?
They're San Francisco.
Well, how far is that from Los Angeles?
It's about an 8-hour drive. Oh, okay. Especially then with a 55-mile-per-hour speed limit. But yeah, San Francisco is Northern California, and that's almost its own
state. Don't know the geography of your country. How the fuck do I know?
Well, that's why we're explaining it here.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
The best band on the West Coast in that era was the Avengers, but they're not going to be. They opened for the Sex Pistols at Winterland and blew them off the stage. They gave a way better set. Of course, Sex Pistols broke up that night, but
John, who was that band? It was a punk band on the West Coast who had an Asian singer with a mohawk. Fuck, I can't think. They were on the they were on a preview of one of the what was it, the Dead Kennedy videos that came out? Who released those? That company?
Flipside Video, I think, put out.
That's it, yeah. So it was a band on. Was Flipside also a record company as well?
They put out records, I think vinyl singles or vinyl EPs.
Right.
Because they were a punk magazine, a punk fanzine that got huge.
Oh, like Hard and Heavy. I like an early version of Hard and Heavy, were they?
No. They Flipside, it was a really thick punk rock fanzine that became a very thick magazine, and it would take you months to finish a Flipside magazine if you tried to read the whole thing. It was insane. Like, this is back when punk zines were just jam-packed with writing. And, you know, you look at magazines today and you can read them in 15 minutes. It doesn't take any time. It's mostly ads. But back then, this is back when punk zines were just overloaded with information. And Flipside was the best and didn't have that pro-commie position of Maximum Rock and Roll.
Okay.
And they released videos, and I think they had their own record label at least in the 90s, and put out a lot of LA bands were put out on the label.
I'm just looking here at Flipside's you know, Discog page, and they've actually got a DVD out of Best of Flipside Video Volume 1, Bad Religion, Circle Jerks, Dickies, and the Weirdos.
Yeah, they put out a Devo video that's pretty amazing. It's early Devo before they were, you know, new wave anemic dweebs.
Right.
They were supposed to put out a video of Crime, the San Francisco punk band, performing at a prison. And they just include a trailer of it, and I don't know if the video was ever released.
Okay. But yeah,
I wouldn't mind seeing it. Crime is is another one of those bands that's kind of forgotten, but they're a little tough to listen to, especially in video. But if you have a bootleg or one of their albums and you play it really loud, it sounds good. But it does not sound good at low volume.
Right.
It's a weird phenomenon I can't explain, but it's only with punk bands.
Yeah. It's just, like I said, I'm just trying to...
The Weirdos are great, though. I'd love to see the Weirdos video.
Actually, I think the video company I'm thinking of is Target Video. I think it's that.
Oh, it might be Target Video. That was a subsidiary, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Target that was going to put out Crime and never did. And they also put out the Devo. That might be confusing.
Target put out Devo Live 1980?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Target.
That's a great video.
Right.
Devo was a punk band back then, and then they were called New Wave.
Right. Yeah, so that's the band I'm thinking of. But I'm trying to think of a damn band with that Asian singer.
Well, like an odd thing I noticed, like we talk about music critic music, the best was the Angry Samoans. but they're not represented here at all.
I've never heard of them. Never heard
them. I've heard of them. Yeah, I've heard John talk about them.
Yeah, Angry Samoans are really, really funny and very good.
Kind of makes me think of Turbo Negro for some reason, who just put out a new record.
Did they?
Yeah.
What's what was the other band?
It's all like has all the song titles have like vague white power and
white power and Nambla is usually. Yeah,
yeah. Oh my god!
Sailors,
oh, Jesus. Yeah. What's the other band you're talking about? The Jamaican one or West Indian Caribbean band?
Bad Brains.
Bad Brains. Yeah.
Yeah, they're from DC.
Yeah, they're not from LA.
Right, right.
They're like Rollins talks about them a lot because he was from that area with Minor Threat and all that.
Right.
But yeah, you know, there are some bands in here that are a total wash for me, like Alice Bag Band and Catholic Discipline. Just not interesting at all. Germs, you know, I did not enjoy any of the songs in this movie. I've never listened to the Germs really, but, you know, Darby Crash is kind of a character. He's kind of entertaining on a certain sick level.
Well, he was a homosexual, so that's...
Oh, was he?
Was he really?
Yeah, he was
hanging out with some chick in there.
Yeah.
He married the editor of Decline Part 2, which...
Yeah, they're let's be honest, they're fruit flies. And, no, he had women hanging out with him, but he was a homosexual.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Holy shit, I didn't know that.
He died before the movie came out. I didn't know that.
He died on the... He killed himself the same week John Lennon was shot, so nobody paid any attention to his death.
Mm, shit.
Yeah, what happened was he went to London for like instead for like maybe it was a month or so, and he hung out with Adam Ant, and he came back with a mohawk. And at that time, it was like 1979, 1980 in LA. No punkers had mohawks yet, so they were completely baffled by his stage appearance. And,
what was it when they see Chuck in the movie with this mohawk? Everybody's going, "What are you doing?"
Right. It wasn't a thing.
Look, you know.
And Darby came back from England with the mohawk, and it was like the crazy mohawk we know now, like the guys in Rancid or whatever, with the huge spikes and everything. And it's like, and I think it was inspired by De Niro and Taxi Driver.
Could have been.
Because that was 77 or whatever, or 78. Or
and I kind of wonder if De Niro and Taxi Driver wasn't like directly referencing American Indians, you know.
Yeah, he was. But that
the
was
Searchers
like
influences, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the fathers of.
Native Americans, please. Not Indians.
Right, Redskins, you know, tribal. But yeah, if you watch The Last of the Mohicans or something, you would see, you know, a stuntman like Robert Tessier have like a cool mohawk, so I'm sure that's fine. A little bit, but yeah, Darby Crash completely confused people, and then killed himself. But
I heard he said on stage, like, "I'm going to go home and kill myself," and then he did.
Yeah, I was listening to a Soundgarden box set before I tossed it into the trade-in pile.
Before Chris Cornell killed himself.
Right, and I noticed there was a lot of suicide was covered in the songs, you know. It's just like, okay, well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised.
My fiancé was talking about Linkin Park, and she said, I guess all that stuff was real. Like, all the, like, the depressing stuff and all that.
Yeah.
Like, just like... No, I guess it wasn't just like cool posturing. I guess he really
was. A cry for help is a cry for help, apparently. I mean, I think it's because Alice Cooper did stuff like the Ballad of Dwight Frye and all this crazy stuff. And he was a perfectly normal dude. So he understood it's a stage persona. And these guys apparently don't understand the stage persona aspect, that this is a work. And, you know, and I guess they didn't see Alice playing golf with George Burns on TV. So they
hanging out with it, Groucho Marx.
Right, they take it literally. And, the Dead Kennedys have these songs making fun of high school jocks and football players or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I told a punk rock friend of mine who used to see the Dead Kennedys back in the early 80s, and I said, yeah, I was at a Thor concert and Zolar X was opening and Jello Biafra was there, and Zolar X was trying to banter with the audience and said, "How did your Broncos do?" Because it was football season. And Jello Biafra was like, "Boo! Send them back to your planet." And so my punk friend was stunned that Jello Biafra admitted to watching the NFL. So I was like, well, it is a persona. It's a stage thing, you know.
Yeah, Jello Biafra, you know, he's playing a character, you know.
Exactly. They're playing characters on stage, and they're probably very different, you know, in real life. It's just a persona. It's an act. But these guys like Chris Cornell and whoever, apparently
the 90s Yeah, like Kurt Cobain, like the whole 90s grunge thing was like it was real. It wasn't like an Alice Cooper act. And that's that was kind of bad. Like it kind of spread these real feelings around. I don't know.
Yeah, I think all that stuff's a blight on culture in general. And
like, the Melvins never had any problems because they were just weird, you know?
Right. And if you see interviews with Buzzo, he's like, he's making fun of guys like Kurt Cobain.
Buzzo's a total, like, that guy's reading Hans Hermann Hoppe in his room, you know?
he's listening to Thomas Sowell's his favorite writer. None of his listeners don't even know who that is. And then he's like, then he's talking about, oh, Kurt Cobain didn't have stomach problems. He just wanted an excuse to do heroin. Come on. What about him claiming he had sex with a fat girl in high school? He goes, he made that up. I would have heard about it.
Buzz has always said that Kurt's shtick was... He basically has always been pretty real about the whole Kurt Cobain thing. He knew him, and he doesn't buy into the legend, you know, because he knew the guy, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you guys want to talk about on this?
So, you know, that's the Germs. Circle Jerks, they kind of tie into Black Flag.
Yeah, because Keith stole the songs and was actually sued by this Black Flag.
Yeah, that first Circle Jerks album, Group Sex, is awesome.
Yeah.
I have a few of their albums on vinyl that I've found over the years, and they're amazing.
Yeah, they're great.
And I like Off, too. Keith's other band that has Raymond Pettibone artwork is pretty fun. All the songs are like less than a minute long. But what was it in the commentary when Keith shows up? Penelope goes, "Where's your dreads, dude?" He's got those big dreadlocks now. Yeah, he's in Decline Part 3, and he's got the dreadlocks, but they're not as crazy as they are now.
Yeah, every time I've seen him, he's had the dreadlocks, which I don't... But whatever, you know.
Whatever, you know. Do your thing. But he started a Black Flag spinoff thing called Flag with basically every other former Black Flag member, like Dez and Chuck and...
Everybody a bad mouth, Greg.
Yeah, Greg, was it the guy from the Descendants who played... drums for Black Flag a lot. What was that guy's name? Bill Stevenson.
Okay.
He's in the Descendants. He played drums for Black Flag for a while. I think he played with Flag, and you know they toured a lot, but I think they got shut down by Greg.
Oh, probably. I wouldn't know.
You know, because they had a really awesome Facebook page. It was called Black Flag, and they would just post cool like punk and stoner rock stuff all the time. And I think I messaged them and. What version of it was left, and I said, why don't you guys post the cool songs anymore? And they were like, well, we're just, you know.
They were like, fuck off.
No, they told me, they said we're in legal trouble and we're just not doing that now. You know, okay. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, Circle Jerks are a really cool band. I love Beverly Hills, Red Tape, Wasted, which was a Black Flag song. I Just Want Some Skank. You know, there was just fun songs. Like they don't interview them. They're one of the bands that's not interviewed. You just have the performances. But I love Keith like cooling his head with a beer. You know, like holding the Budweiser to his head.
Oh, their shows were legendary. Like you always heard that they were a great live band and one of the best you could see.
And it comes through here. Like, here's the thing. Like, you know, we said a lot of the musicianship is crap, but it's the energy that really gets you off. X, kind of boring and artsy in this movie. I like some X albums, you know. I actually enjoy X quite a bit, but
I'll tell you one thing I made a note of when I was watching X was never get a tattoo off them.
Oh, I know. Penelope Spheris said, she asked John Doe if getting a tattoo hurts, and he poked her skin a few times, and she now has these things that look like blackheads are.
They're just the worst tattoos I've ever seen. They're just shit backyard jobs.
Oh, I know. It's totally terrible.
Tattoos weren't even legal in New York at the time. Like, tattoo parlors were actually tough to find.
I remember Dave Ellefson gave an interview, the bassist for Megadeth, who we'll talk about next week. And and he said he and Dave Mustaine never got a tattoo.
Right.
And he said the reason is that if you had a tattoo, you were a scary MF. You know, like he said when he saw Bon Scott come out with a tattoo, with AC/DC, he said, "This guy's dangerous."
I mean, it meant something different back then.
Yeah, it did. They said that to his generation, to he and Dave, that getting a tattoo meant something that it doesn't mean to all these other metal guys. And he said that that's why, you know, they never got a tattoo.
Sorry, well, back now then, it indicates you're like a wimpy ass anti-fa type.
Which Dave Ellefson, by the way, is like a church band guy now. Like,
he's a pastor, isn't he?
He might be, actually. Dave Ellefson and Dave Mustaine are both big evangelicals. But I think Dave Ellefson, when he's not touring with Megadeth, is doing like church music jobs.
You need to get, when you get married in a couple of months, you need to get married by Dave Ellefson. That'd be very cool.
We're getting married by John's wife's cousin, so next best thing.
Well, no, not really. No, it's not. Not even close. I'm sure he's a very nice guy, but no, it's not Dave Ellefson.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, a couple of years after this was made, Exene Cervenka, whatever her name is.
Doesn't she have lupus or something? Doesn't she have some horrible disease?
She does have some disease. She married Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes, and had a son with him.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Wow.
Exene Cervenka,
a decade or something.
You
wouldn't think. She fell on. She was drunk. One of the last times I saw X, she was drunk and fell on me. So she's pretty awesome. I mean, live they kill it live. Like, they're old, but like they still. John Doe actually looked the same. There's like some touch of gray hair. That was about it.
Was it Penelope Spheris called him the most handsome man in the world?
John Doe. Well, yeah. Billy Zoom looked scary. Like, he's face here, but Billy Zoom was like a tall, scary rockabilly guy.
She said he could still do the ears thing that he does in this.
Yeah. He was pretty awesome. But
her daughter said every time she sees X, she goes, "Do the ears thing." But let's get to the highlight of the show, and that's the end of the movie, which, like Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, saves the best for last, and that's Fear.
Yeah.
I told my fiance about their Saturday Night Live performance.
Oh, that no one can ever see?
Yeah, and she watched, she pulled it up on her computer. Yeah. She saw Lee Ving, and she goes, "He's hot." But she was like, "What's going on?" She goes, "Are these people on the stage paid?" And I said, "No, those are just jerks from DC that came up."
Ian McKay was one of them.
Yeah, it was. A lot of punk rock guys came up and tore the place up. But the figure that they caused, like $400,000 worth of damage, was misinformation spread by Levy. It was just not true.
Yeah, they only got on there because John Belushi loved them.
Yeah, John Belushi got him on SNL, but and he did a song with them that only got released recently.
Oh, John Belushi apparently played drums with the Dead Boys at a set list, like in New York or something.
I knew he was in the metal. I knew he was into like Black Sabbath and all that, but I didn't know he was into.
Fear was one of his favorites. He did song with Fear. You can get the little single vinyl thing. It was like a Record Store Day thing.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
It was called Neighbors. I think it was for the movie Neighbors.
Yes, it was. Yes. Yeah. And they got on the soundtrack because of Belushi.
Oh, my goodness. I've got to check it out. I've seen the film before, and it's okay. But to me,
the movie has its fans. I'm not into it, but I saw it at the theater when I was a kid. So I didn't want to go see Reds.
Basically, because it's a role reversal. It's Belushi's a straight man, and Aykroyd's the insane one in the film. But I remember Kathy Moriarty looking fucking hot as in the movie.
Yeah, and then she didn't do a movie for like 10 years after that. Mm. It was weird.
But I remember the girl from one of the bands in the movie like spitting on Lee Ving and him punching her in the face.
Oh, yeah. Actually, when I saw them live in Boston at the now gone Mamakins Club on, I think it was Lansdowne Street, a skater kid in the audience spit on leaving.
Uh-oh.
He stopped playing. He says, "Some faggot is spitting HIV on me. Get that little faggot out of here." They threw that brat's ass out of there. They threw him right out. The bouncers grabbed him.
But I love when he reads the little like disclaimer to the audience. He does it in a German accent.
Yeah.
Like Fear is by far the fascist of those bands.
Easily.
Yeah. Their logo was basically a swastika with F's.
Yeah, they didn't give a shit. He was like, it's 1980, can't you get a fucking haircut?
Yeah, I know, I love that. He was like, can't you get a haircut?
I heard when he played Berkeley the week Jerry Garcia died. Like, all he did was fuck with the audience. So all you hippies crying because Jerry Garcia's dead?
Have you ever listened to Stormtroopers of Death?
No, I've heard about them.
They're the best.
Their live album, I think it's Rise of the Infidels, is fantastic because Billy Milano, the lead singer, it's basically a spinoff of Anthrax. It's Scotty and
Dan Lilker,
the drummer.
Charlie Benanti,
It's Dan Lilker, the original Anthrax bass player, and Charlie Benanti, and this guy Billy Milano. Billy Milano is extremely offensive, and he's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
Oh, if you want to listen to a amazingly offensive album, listen to the first MOD record.
That's
my gosh! Listen to the song "Are You Hungry?"
That was an old SOD holdover. That song, apparently.
Yeah. It what was it? Like, it has like the N word in it and stuff.
Oh yeah.
And Billy, I heard an interview with Billy where he goes, "I didn't write those lyrics. Scotty Ian wrote those lyrics." Because Scotty, like, because it was making fun of like the Live Aid stuff.
Yeah. It's not the best Live Aid parody song ever. We'll get to that another time. No. But the best, they had the best title as well for not the SOD album Speak English or Die, but they had a 7-inch out, which was a rip on Slayer's Seasons in the Abyss. It was called Seasoning the Obese.
Seasoning the Obese. But Billy Milano, man, that guy, there's this live show he did in Seattle where they started playing Smells Like Teen Spirit. Like, they play the opening riffs. And then, like, Charlie comes in with the drums. And Billy just goes, "You're dead!"
Because they had S.O.D.
You guys like Kurt Cobain?
Yeah, because S.O.D. had the album Speak English or Die, and they had the one called The Ballad of Jimi Hendrix, which is just 4 seconds. It goes, it was the start of, what is it?
Purple Haze.
Start of Purple Haze. It goes, da, 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 and you just hear, "You're dead." And that's it. That's the song.
And on Seasoning the Obese, they had the Ballad of Phil Hartman. Dun, 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 dun. You're dead. Dun, 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 dun.
I should say, if anybody wants to get a prime example of fear without watching this movie, although I do recommend they watch this movie, look up the song "New York Is Alright If You Like Saxophones" on YouTube.
That song is awesome.
That might be my all-time favorite punk song.
Watching my fiance on FaceTime hear that song for the first time was hilarious.
I had a friend visit me.
She goes, "New York's all right if you're a homosexual."
Yeah, like, a friend was visiting me at my apartment back in the day and was telling me, "No, Fear is a big liberal band." I'm like, "What are you talking about? I played that song." And he's like, "Okay, I was totally wrong. Must have been a different band."
New York's all right if you're a homosexual.
New
York's all right if you like art and jazz. There was this bit where, like, somebody in the audience on Rise of the Infidels with SOD was making fun of Billy Milano because he was making fun of Kurt Cobain, and he goes, and then they started playing "We Will Rock You" by Queen. He goes, "This is the Ballad of Freddie Mercury because he was a faggot just like you."
That first MOD album, man, that's so funny.
John, if you want some amazing offensive stuff, look up "Speak English or Die" live at Budokan for SOD.
Yeah,
and the first MOD album. Those are all like awesomely offensive, like hardcore punk. It's great.
You know, I'm sure it's offensive because I think all those guys vote Democrat today.
Oh, Scott! I read Scott Ian's book. That guy is a total liberal.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
he's the worst. And but you know, he was writing all this, like, you know, offensive stuff on these albums. And Billy Milano, who's pretty right wing, although I think he's a big animal rescue guy now.
Yeah.
He
a lot of conservative guys are. They like animals.
They like Hitler loved animals.
It's the conservationist thing.
But the theater set is my favorite by far. Like, you have this long opening with Li Ving just antagonizing the audience, and then you just get a really good set, and that is the highlight of the movie for me.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like we'll see a similar theme in Decline Part Two.
Oh, with Odin.
yeah, with Odin. Yeah, the best. Oh, clearly, the best band with the guitarist from Armored Saint.
Yeah,
slumming it.
Gee, he bailed out of there quick enough to join Armored Saint. Yeah. He got the.
Yeah,
it's like, thank God Dave Pritchard died. It's like, get to join fucking Armored Saint and get out of here.
Yeah.
All right, fellas.
But so, yeah, what do you guys overall, what would you give this movie, Stu? What would you give it out of 10?
I'm giving this out of 10, 9. I think it's brilliant, needs to be seen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was blown away by it. I'd never seen it before until I picked up the box set on Blu-ray.
Yeah, me too.
Very cheap, by the way, for $16 for the whole three films.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah, it was originally going for $50. I'm like, oh, it's not quite the bite price for me, but... Then the company who brought it out was putting it in moratorium. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. Oh, shit. So I just checked out JB, and at that time I had it going for 20, and then 20% off on top of that sale. So I rung my local and said, hold it. I'll be there in 15 minutes. And, yeah, picked up for $16. And it's got all the features on there that is on the Shout one. So it's exactly the same as the Shout release.
Nice.
But yeah, when I first saw it, I was like, oh my God, I think this might be the best of the three, actually, as much as I like part two. But yeah, I think, as a proper documentary, two's different, but we'll get to that next week.
But two's very different. It kind of recreates some stuff, but yeah, it's very different.
Two in one word is just hedonism. That's all it is.
Oh, yeah.
Hedonism, the documentary.
What about you, John?
I give it like a 8.5. I've liked it ever since I saw it. I think back in 1992 was the first time I saw it. I rented a videotape back when video stores had everything, because they had warehouse stock. You can go consult the VHS Memories episode that me and Stuart did to get a feel for that era. But I watched it like twice, I think, when I rented it. And seeing it again, I mean, I always enjoy it every time I see it. Probably the only thing is some of the politics of it, and I don't mean politics as in right left. I mean as in what bands got in here and what didn't, and who didn't, and some of that is a little more obvious to me now. But I'd still say it's great. You should watch it at least once, even if you hate the music from that era.
Yep.
I agree. I actually give it a 6, and it's not. I think that's a good rating.
Shit.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of surprised. My rating's a little lower than y'all's. But the reason I give it a lower rating is just that I find the stuff with Alice Bagban and Catholic Discipline and even parts of X hard to sit through. But
yeah, I understand. But I'm looking at it from my standpoint as a snapshot of the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where that's where its value comes from. I think this is absolutely a essential documentary for. I think if you're going to watch one documentary about like West Coast punk, you know, this is absolutely the movie to watch.
I'd say double it. Like I said before, double it with Another State of Mind if you can find it. I don't know its availability, but
I haven't seen, which I want to see now. I gave it a 6 just because like I find parts of it, you know, kind of drag for me, but it is the stuff that's awesome, you know, is extremely entertaining. I love the stuff with Fear, the Germs, you know, Circle Jerks, like the Germs, not necessarily the music, just the antics, Circle Jerks, Black Flag, you know, Fear, all that stuff is great. And the interviews in it are pretty good. Like, you know, hearing this little kid talk about like, oh, it's like real rock and roll again. You know, yeah, that was what punk was. It was taking rock back to its roots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody forgets that. They think it was some sort of thing for left-wing politics, which it
no,
was.
it was going like, hey, we love rockabilly. Let's play that. Like, you know, you hear that very explicitly with bands like the Cramps. Mm. You know, they were listening to old rockabilly records. You know, it wasn't this brand new thing. You know, it was, you know, like, you know, the Sex Pistols were going off of what they heard with, they were going off what they heard with like, Alice Cooper, you know, Johnny Rotten.
Right. Mm-hmm. It was Alice Cooper and stuff like Roxy, the early Roxy music and,
yeah.
Probably bands like Slade, although, you know,
totally.
I don't know if they'd admit to it then, but you know, even Gary Glitter type stuff. It was like it was an extension of glitter rock done on a low budget, and that was English punk rock. And then New York punk rock was an attempt to blend bubblegum music with like Slade with the Ramones, and they ended up just basically creating a new rock and roll subdivision or subgenre.
Yeah, so it was You know, I don't want you to think that a 6 is a bad rating. I mean, I think this is absolutely an essential movie. I just, you know, there's just parts of it that, you know, I kind of, when I was watching it again, I fast forwarded through like the Catholic discipline performances.
Yeah, nobody actually sits through any of that.
Yeah, and like the Alice Bagband stuff, I was like, I don't care. You know, I'll watch the X stuff because, you know, it's X, whatever.
Right.
The Germ stuff I'll watch just because it's fun to watch Darby Crash crawl around like a panther. You know,
what I think is funny about the Germs is the lyrics are actually pretty interesting because they're like this closeted gay stuff. And but it's kind of like Judas Priest. Like if you look at some of those lyrics, they're very weird in the context now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, now it makes sense. But the funny thing about Black Flag, this, of course, not mentioned in the movie, but their big influences when they started out were Ted Nugent and Black Oak, Arkansas.
Oh, yeah. What was it? Henry Rollins said, you know, if, you know, these kids today, I'd force them to listen to the first 4 Ted Nugent albums and, you know, the first 4 Black Sabbath albums, you know, to, you know, get them while they do yard work, you know, to get those kids right. You know, that was their, like, you know, in the straight edge movement was inspired by Ted Nugent, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. So that's it. Next week, we'll look at Decline Part 2, which is, you know, the metal years. So with that, I'm just going to go ahead and say adios.
And say MAGA.
Wow.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.